God will bring every work into judgment. Welcome back to Hackberry House, a podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church in North Korea. My name is Bob. This is podcast number 448. It is April 17, 2016. Well, today the bays that we've been following in this wonderful book, These Are the Generations by Eric Foley, the bays leave North Korea. Mrs. Bae continues the narration of her story to Eric Foley, who wrote this book. And by the way, the whole thing is available at Amazon.com, and I do hope you'll pick up a copy soon. Here's Mrs. Bae speaking. One late November day, 2009, my daughter, my son, and I walked out our front door in North Korea and never looked back. We headed straight for the mountains, or straight up the mountains, more accurately. The reason why is because we lacked the necessary travel permit from the North Korean government that would have enabled us to pass openly through the North Korean cities along our route or to visit China legally. Everyone who desires to travel anywhere in North Korea has to have a travel document, an internal passport of sorts with an official stamp on it. It can take months to get, cost $100 or more per person, and almost certainly wouldn't have been granted to the wife and children of a man who had recently defected. And so we headed for the mountains. My husband left months before we did to scout out the best route and prepare our way. Along our journey in those few places where the reception and the security situation were good, he guided us as best he could through necessarily brief cell phone calls. Now, of course, it was difficult to pick our way through unfamiliar mountains, cities, and checkpoints by relying only on directions hastily relayed over the phone. God would have to be our navigator. We walked all day, every day. But one day, in a city in North Korea with lax security, we were able to arrange for a car to carry us for a few hours without us having to show any permits. On another day, in another village at the base of another cluster of mountains, we visited a house and told them that we were heading to a city up near the border to visit my mother-in-law and had lost our travel permits. They kindly directed us to a train station. Now, as is typical in North Korea, we had to wait for that train for 10 days. And even then, we couldn't ride it very far. Well, these were the exceptional days, however. Most of the time, we just walked, or rather hiked. Since 70% of North Korea is composed of mountains, and mountains stand as sentries over the few gaps left by North Korea's guards, police, and security agents. Thinking back, it seems unbelievable to me that we survived. I still wonder how it all happened. The woods in the mountain we climbed were so dense and tangled that on many occasions we couldn't even see the sky directly above us. In more times than you or even I today can imagine, we pushed slowly and painfully forward through frigid snowdrifts packed chest high. There was no other choice, no other direction to go but through. Since my husband wasn't with us, there was no one I and my children could call out to help us when we were in trouble except God. And I believe God walked by my side during those interminable days in as real and present a way as my children did. In the Bible, Isaiah the prophet cried out, Emmanuel, God with us. And so God was to us, walking with us, almost always unrecognized by us, like Christ on the road to Emmaus. Only we walked a lot farther than Emmaus, and it was a lot more expensive. As the light would fade each day, we would head for the nearest village and stay in whatever home looked us safest in exchange for payment. I'd ask the owner of each home for help, telling them that my mother-in-law lived up by the border and confessing that we were basically lost on the way there, which was actually quite true. In each place, God arranged for some person or family who was willing to let us spend the night in their home for about $1. Quite a daily miracle of hospitality, given how dangerous it can be to take in a stranger in North Korea. None of the families had much money, and a dollar was enough to buy a kilogram of rice, enough to feed a family for a day. They would feed us too, sometimes more food than we thought we could eat. We North Koreans may all have been close to starving, but most of us were still clinging to our humanity, still doing our best to show care and hospitality, still seeking to carry on the customs that we had learned from our youth. And it was a good thing each family was so hospitable, because we needed as much nutrition as we could get. My daughter was pregnant at the time, as is often the case with defectors. She had to leave her husband behind, else he would have had to bring his whole family too, and you'll recall that my own health was a regular struggle. And sons in North Korea are no different than sons anywhere. They always need to eat. Each dawn would bring a goodbye to our hosts, followed by another draining day of walking and hiking and hiding. On the eighth day, we passed 13 guard posts. They were multiplying as we moved toward the border. All we had with us were a few changes of clothes and the barest essentials, which certainly made us look suspicious. Whenever anyone asked us where we were going, we told them we were going to visit my parents-in-law near the border. Despite the number of guards we passed, they never seemed to notice us or demand our paperwork. Emmanuel. During the day, I often stopped to ask people for directions, and sometimes, somehow, God always arranged for us to run into others going the same way. The biggest problem, though, was that the closer we came to the border, the more worn out we were becoming from travel. Each time a guard post came into view, in order to avoid scrutiny, we had to act like people on a very enjoyable trip to visit relatives, who, of course, would have happily shown you their travel permits if you stopped them and asked, not like worn-out vagabonds aching from pushing uphill through chest-high snow, fatigued beyond belief from kilometer after kilometer of evading the authorities, eyes trained to the border, hearts bent on defection. But God always sent someone to refresh us and deliver his care to us whenever we thought all was lost. Through his grace, we even got to spread his love along the way. One time we stayed with a middle-aged woman who was in terrible pain due to a stomach ailment. I had prescription medicines with me for my own difficult medical condition, so I gave her some of my medicine. Immediately, her condition began to improve. I offered to give her all my medicine and the equivalent of about $3 if she would go with us and help us, which she was able to do for 2 days. Traveling without a permit and with strangers in North Korea was, of course, quite risky for her, so her accompaniment was really a sacrifice, especially given her illness. I gave her my sister's phone number and urged her to call if she became sick again. We may have been running for our lives, but we were still Christians running for our lives. Our sleep in the middle-aged woman's home was sweet and deep. Thinking back on it, I can see that God's invisible hand was tenderly cradling each one of us. God knew that the woman needed medicine, so he arranged for us to show up with nowhere else to stay. My daughter, who was pregnant at the time, needed sleep, so he arranged for the middle-aged woman to cross our path. And I, maybe more than anyone, needed the rest to clear my head for the challenges ahead. The closer we came to the border, the more the spoken dialect would change, and the harder and riskier it would be to ask anyone for help. Spies and guards abounded. In that region, they used trucks for public transportation, not buses. Unfortunately, without a travel permit, the middle-aged woman was unable to accompany us any farther. We were on our own again, with no knowledge of the local area, and our accents increasingly marking us out as strangers the farther we got away from home. At the first checkpoint we encountered, a guard approached to inspect the truck, while we collectively held our breaths and tried to appear relaxed. Much to our surprise and relief, the guard waved us through after little more than a quick glance. But when we came to a second post, this one operated by state security personnel, they started unloading everything from the truck and examining it carefully. Our hearts raced. It must have been obvious, because one of the old women in the truck sought to comfort me by whispering that if none of us had any copper, we would be okay. Copper is very valuable in China. So is tungsten. That's one reason why the North Korean government examines trucks and passengers so carefully, to make sure no one is trying to smuggle these minerals out of the country. Well, fortunately, none of us in the truck had copper, and the guards waved us on at last. Finally, we came to the village near the border where my mother-in-law lived. You will recall that she was the one who had led me to the Lord, and who had cared for us in every possible way during her visits. She was the one who had taught us so much at our kitchen table over many nights. You may be thinking that this must have been the moment in our journey where her front door just burst open and we enjoyed a warm, heartfelt reunion and many tears and prayers, or at least a warm bed and a big family dinner. But you would be forgetting where we were and what had recently happened. My husband had just defected from North Korea and was now considered an enemy of the state. His parents' home was now being watched around the clock by state security agents. The ground around the town was frozen solid. Even inside my mother-in-law's home, just about everything was frozen. And we ourselves were emotionally frozen. We who had shared so many tears and lessons and prayers could do little more than to make small talk, knowing that someone would undoubtedly be watching, listening, reporting everything. Our encounter could only last an hour. I was sad to say goodbye, sad not to be able to enjoy deep and heartfelt conversation, sad to miss what might be her final prayers and encouragement and instruction for me this side of heaven. Still, I completely understood why we could not stay longer or say more. Now was not the time to cry or celebrate or raise any suspicions. Sometimes it's enough just to be able to look into someone else's eyes. That's how I and my children found ourselves standing out in front of the train station, trying desperately to get warm. But even standing there longer than an hour would have prompted agents to investigate. Even there. So, all too soon, I had no choice but to lead my children back into the teeth of the cold as nonchalantly as I could, while my mind raced, trying to figure out where we could spend the night. But I need not have worried, as God was with us and had no problem graciously providing for us yet again. We ran into a woman who was kind enough to show us somewhere we could stay. It was a man's home, and on his wall hung a special portrait of Kim Il-sung. It certainly felt a little unusual to be carrying out our defection under the eye of the great leader about whom I had taught so many so faithfully for so long. It turned out that the man's wife had defected to South Korea. They didn't have any problems in their relationship, he insisted. She just left to make money. But he was waiting for her to come back, longing to hear from her, not marrying anyone else. Since he lived alone and needed a way to make money, he allowed people to stay with him. He made us porridge because he had no rice, which I wasn't very happy about since I had given him money and he could have purchased some. He said that he wanted to stay in North Korea and live a good life. My idea of the good life, however, was clearly very different than his, and certainly didn't include godlike portraits of Kim Il-sung hanging on the wall. Even though the man offered to let us stay longer, we knew we needed to keep moving forward in order to avoid attracting attention. In addition to facing the problem of an ever-decreasing number of options for lodging, we had another immediate concern, an ever-decreasing amount of money in our pockets. Although we had reached the border, we had nowhere near the money we would need to cross the river into China, nowhere near the money we would need to cross that huge country, and nowhere near the money required to cross from China into a third country to finally reach a South Korean embassy willing to receive us and transport us to South Korea. South Korean embassies in China won't receive North Koreans for fear of the Chinese government. To make matters worse, the price of commodities along the border was inconceivably high. Rice, which cost The 2,000 North Korean won at home here cost 300,000 won, more than 100 U.S. dollars. We exchanged what little currency we had into Chinese yuan and sewed it up into the seams of my son's clothing for safekeeping, patching over the seams in order to avoid detection. My daughter and I started to treat those who were sick in exchange for money. We earned a little less than a dollar per patient, which not only wasn't enough to pay for our border crossing, but it wasn't even enough to pay for food or shelter to keep the three of us alive. I realized we would have to cross the river without being able to pay for any protection or assistance. It was seemingly the most desperate kind of exodus, the kind that often led to defectors being captured or executed. We walked along the edge of the river for several days, looking for the best place to cross. The problem was that the best places to cross, the places with the least police presence, were by definition also the most dangerous, with natural barriers, acting as a police force all their own. And finally, we selected a location to cross. The decision came with a lot of concern for me because of my daughter's pregnancy. In order to cross the river, we'd have to first lower ourselves down a cliff about 3.5 meters high. My daughter saw my worry and urged me to trust in God, an admonition that became a whole lot easier when we found a rope nearby, which I knew was God's provision. And so my son jumped down. I jumped down. And my daughter hesitated not at all, scrambling down without a trace of fear, and taking off running in a mad dash with the rest of us once she reached the bottom. Now, the river was about 150 meters wide at that point. We had to just throw ourselves into it and swim across it as fast as we could, ignoring the piercing liquid cold and the possible impact of my daughter's pregnancy. The last voices I heard in North Korea were the shouts of people in the city crying out, "Catch them! Catch them!" Maybe God didn't exactly part the river for us, but He restrained those who sought to do us harm until we could safely reach the other side. That was Exodus enough. Oh, and I think that's story enough for today. I can hear your hearts pounding through my computer. Mine is too. We got him as far as out of North Korea anyway, and she's telling the story here so you know it's all going to be okay, but it is rough listening to, isn't it? Everyday life in North Korea. Every day people are doing this, trying to do it anyway. They're not all successful for whatever reasons. Next week we'll pick up right there, find out what happens. We only have a couple or three more times to be together on this book. These Are the Generations is the name of it. Eric Foley, the author, available at Amazon.com. Now that you're on my website here, why don't you look around and you'll find a lot of prophecy studies, totally unrelated to what we're doing right now, but prophecy, end-time prophecy. I've spent a lot of hours researching and writing. I'd like you to go and check some of those things out while you're there. Tomorrow, Monday, time again for Spurgeon, Bunyan, the Christian, the Pilgrim's Progress. That'll be fun. Amen. Well, don't forget this scripture in Ecclesiastes 12:14. God is going to bring every work, whether it's good or evil, said Solomon, into judgment.